Blog Talk Radio.
It is Friday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the political consciousness of one Mr. Political Slick Pavlovic. Well, a lot of things to talk about this evening. A lot more Trump things to talk about. Right now, let's introduce our panel, Mr. Attorney Lou Vannell, retired. Lou, how are we doing this evening?
Fine, James. How are you doing?
Oh, doing great. Things are a little chilly out here in Cali, but, you know, that's all relative in comparison. But, things are going great. Seems like the political climate is picking up out here. Should be very interesting to see how things are going to be going on, not only with our tax cuts, but with some of the trade talks and a few other things. Janet, how are we doing this evening?
Well, I'm glad we're here. it's been a pretty wild and crazy week, as usual. A little wilder this week than usual, but I hope that doesn't mean it's going to be even wilder next week. No, but hanging in here is all I can say. And it's scary watching the news these days, and it's not safe either. Oh, boy. So, yeah, our temperatures are falling a bit, which is a nice change both for a few days.
Well, first of all, let's have a moment of silence for the victims of another mass shooting this week in Texas. So before we get the show started, let's have a few moments of silence for the victims of this senseless massacre. Well, once again, we see we have another senseless massacre taking place in Texas. It seems once again we've had someone slip through the cracks and be able to appoint to possess weapons of I don't know whether to call them weapons of mass destruction anymore or what. I mean, you know, it just, well, first of all, let's start with you, Janet. What did you take away from the events in Texas this week?
Well, I think aside from the fact that it's disgusting, this guy was obviously a madman, right? And apparently, I mean, it hasn't been confirmed anywhere, but apparently he was looking for his mother-in-law or ex-mother-in-law. But the point is that he never should have been able to even buy a gun, never mind the guns that he had. And I call it mass destruction. Just if you could fire 300 rounds that fast, that seemed mass to me. And you know, the fact that the guy across the street, you know, had his gun to go run in after him, you know, I know that's all very heroic, but it's like, so who doesn't have a gun? And you know, I just don't see any reason. I honestly don't, I don't understand the gun law. I know why we have the Second Amendment. It's not what everybody thinks, but because I did listen to aside from someone who interpreted what Thomas Jefferson said, I did listen to Justice. I saw it on YouTube. Justice Warren Burger describing what it really meant, interpreting what it really meant. And it didn't mean that everybody can have as many guns as they want, you know, and that whole type of thing. But, okay, the Air Force dropped the ball on that. But, you know, even so, I still feel that in the country, especially in Texas, because our daughter lives in Texas, and I don't know, she doesn't have a gun, but she has not many people that don't have guns. And all the men for sure have guns, rifles and pistols and everything and anything. And they treasure them, which is nuts to me. But I think he would have gotten one anyway, since he obviously, you know, had this thing in mind to do, and he was going to get it done one way or another. And it's just, this whole fear of, and Obama never said, I'm going to take your guns away, so that's not true, because you hear that all the time. But this whole thing of having so many guns and they have to be semi-automatic or whatever, I mean, the thing is, it's just insane, you know, and the idea that the president, would say, well, you know, like if there were guns in the church, or if other people had guns, it's like, you're kidding, right? I mean, so now you want to actually be taking a gun into a church? I mean, this is, you know, how much more bizarre can it get? And then I didn't watch Fox News, because I don't. But I did see a clip of a Fox News thing where this one woman said, and I don't know where they find these people, one woman said, it's a good place to die because you're closer to God. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, how could you say something like that? You know, the whole thing is just beyond comprehension, you know, from beginning to end. But naturally, you know, like, people, even Zimmerman here, after, you know, his whole trial, quote unquote trial, if you want to call it that, went to Texas and he had a gun on him, open carry thing. I mean, it's just like, come on, like, this is not the Wild West, or it shouldn't be the Wild West. But apparently it is the Wild West, and depending on who you are. And it's sickening and it's frightening, you know. I mean, as far as that goes. And just by the way, you know, I actually did want I went to get a concealed weapon permit because we and I were almost robbed. And then when they cop sat down and explained to me what that could happen, I thought maybe it's not such a good idea if I carry it, because I probably wouldn't have shooting myself, you know. At that time, my son, who was an Army Ranger, and he was over in Black Hawk Down, and that was a whole nightmare. And he said, you definitely don't, you should not have a gun. You definitely will shoot yourself. So, or someone will take the gun and shoot you with it. So I'm like, okay, I'm done with that. I think I'm over it. But, you know, the idea of anybody being armed in a church, I mean, it's the last place in the world I would think you need to be, you know, armed and frankly dangerous at that point. But I don't know. I mean, these things, and then the other thing too is that once again, you know, this is my description of a white male radicalized American, because, you know, had this man been a Muslim, forget about it. Had he been Hispanic, forget about it. Had he been black, forget about it. But, you know, very little was said when it didn't. Then it just thoughts and prayers. And I have a friend that has two cats. She named one thoughts and the other prayers. He said, because that's how much good it's going to do me. You know, and it's just kind of, I don't know, like I feel like when it comes down to that, like that guy Paddock in Vegas, or this Kelly of all names in Texas, it's really horrible and too bad, and everybody else should be armed them. Let's move on. You know, we're not doing a whole big thing about it because, I mean, after all, I mean, this is just a dishonorably discharged Air Force guy who was spent a year in the brig for violence, I think domestic violence, and bad domestic violence. I think he kills his son or at least names him, and of course his wife, his ex-wife. So it's just scary all the way around. I mean, from every direction, and you don't know where it's coming from anymore. The last place I would imagine would be church.
Lou, it seems that the Texas Attorney General has now proposed to either have private armed guards in church or some type of privatization for people going to church. Lou, I mean, what in the world is going on when the Attorney General calls for armed guards in church?
It certainly is a frightening situation, James. But the idea of armed guards, I only think compounds the terror that's actually going on. I can't see armed guards. Most of the churches that in rural, like Texas, where we had that horrible scene with 26 people dead and I think 25 injured, whatever. But most of these churches couldn't possibly afford armed guards. They take premium cost, and right now I think churches are really scraping just to get by. So the idea of armed guards may be appealing, but it's not practical. I think that there should be some coordinated efforts, maybe a national program that could be adopted by local community churches or whatever. Well, I'm thinking about like something that's available right now. I think the churches, by and large, have specific times and dates for their ceremonies, for their services. Like, presumably, it's Sunday, it's 11 o'clock or 10 o'clock, it's over by 12 or 1 o'clock. I think that what might be practical is that a police car be outside the church when the services are being administered by the pastor, the preacher, whatever. I think that would serve the security situation, at least temporarily, until maybe something more practical. I can't say more practical because I think having a police car outside the church is a deterrent. I'm looking at these churches as being soft targets. We have this massacre out in Texas, if I recall correctly. We had that prayer meeting in South Carolina. These are soft targets. The assailants who conduct these massacres and whatever, they choose their target. Why pick out something like a bank or an office building or whatever? Because they're not soft targets. The soft targets are the prayer meeting, the church, or schools even. And there they can do their killing and not be in fear maybe of being shot before they get enough people killed, that guy in Las Vegas, you could see with a semi-automatic or whatever the armaments that he had there, how fast, in a matter of minutes, you could wipe out 50 people. I mean, it's ridiculous to think that an armed guard could solve the problem. You got to have somebody outside to give ample time and warning. I think that churches could contribute by narrowing down the time that services are being conducted so that they can coordinate with the police department, that when they have their service on Sunday, there'll be a police car. I just think that this lone wolf type assailant is something that it's almost impossible to monitor. You don't know where they're going to spring up next, in a truck coming down the road or a car or whatever. So I think you got to go step by step, and for an immediate band-aid, I think the police car being positioned outside of when the services are being conducted might temporarily assist. Certainly it's not a cure. But I think that we really have to now take a deep breath and prepare, let's say, be prepared for whatever might be an appealing target, like a soft target especially.
The only thing about that is, like, what's next? The next time it's not a church, it's another school, it's a shopping mall or something like that, you know, that's so it just happens so quickly. And you can have a policeman sitting out there and he could be sitting dead in his police car. Because I think in this guy's case, he probably would have just shot him on the way in, you know, and who would have even noticed? You know, I mean, it just seems, I don't know. I mean, it's unlikely, I would think, it's unlikely that somebody's going to do that again. This guy had something in his mind, and the only thing I've heard so far was he was really looking for his mother-in-law, and then he actually got his grandmother-in-law. But, you know, so there's some screwy motive that just not. But the problem is that, you know, we're seeing more and more of this happening here, and it's happening by white Americans. It's not ISIS. You know, they're not having Mexicans. I mean, it's just, you know, as much as they want to talk about the gangs and everything else, I mean, really, think about it. I mean, it's terrorizing. And you don't have to be part of ISIS to be a terrorist. And, you know, I'd like to see these guys labeled as terrorists because that's what they really are. I mean, they're as much a terrorist as any ISIS guy, that's for sure. I mean, where is the difference? And it's just the whole thing is, I just think that I read the other day something about how many guns we have compared to the rest of the world. And it was something so ridiculous, I can't even remember the amount. For instance, like in Japan, if you're caught with a gun, I mean, you are facing some serious time. And so you don't. So if they don't do that. I mean, they don't have it because they mean it. They're not kidding around. So, you know, but we're never going to have laws like that because we will never have a Congress that strong. I mean, those days, I think, are over, at least for a while. You know, I don't know what's going to happen up the road. As long as you don't wind up in a nuclear war with somebody. But, you know, right now, it's too soon. And when Trump said, you know, well, this isn't a gun problem, this is a mentally ill problem, I was like, you gotta be kidding. Like, did he really say that? It's like, he just signed something saying that mentally ill people should be allowed to have guns. So, like, excuse me? You want to go back on that one? But we know we have the best memory in the world, but it's very short term. So I think it is a gun problem. And I don't mean that no one should have guns, and I don't mean that Yeah, I just don't understand why somebody has to have every type of gun that they make and have to have, you know, 3, 8, 10, 12, you know, guns. I don't get it. I really don't. And you know you're not shooting Bambi with those guns. You know, so those guns are made for one reason and one reason alone. And that's what you can
say. Yeah, Bambi's not walking around with a bulletproof vest on. But
right.
Let's talk about one of the milestones. Of course, it's been 1 year since Trump has been in office. I'm going to start with you on this one, Janet. Why don't you give us your assessment of Trump's first year in office?
I think it's just been absolutely horrible. I mean, I don't think you could get a worse year, I mean, other than the 9/11, but, you know, I don't think you could get a worse year. I feel like, and I heard this just a little while ago, I read it, one or the other, where they're talking about Korea and North Korea, and, like, he is just itching to have this a war, which is, like, not a joke. This is not a game. And, you know, I had a cousin that was over there, and this is serious stuff. I mean, real serious stuff. And it was a senator from Colorado, Gardner, I think his name was, and he likened the whole North Korea thing like this. He said, "Well, if you were sitting at a table and two kids were having a food fight, did you just sit there and let them have the food fight, or did you do something to stop them?" And I'm like, "Yeah, and what?" And so he's thinking, well, it may be a real good idea to just, you know, show Kim Jong-un who's the boss. And the thing is, it's like, wow, this guy is really, really out to lunch. And, you know, I'm surprised he's not one of our senators. But, of course, he's sitting in Colorado. But the thing that all I've seen in this year has been, well, hate mongering all over the place, no matter what. I think our standing in the world is, you know, they used to say they don't respect us anymore after George W., and then they really didn't respect us after Obama, which I think is absolutely ridiculous, but that's what, quote unquote, they say. And both Trumps are going to respect us. And I think right now, I don't think there's a country in the world that trusts us to, you know, to anything we say or promise or do. I mean, it's going to change tomorrow. You know, what's tomorrow? What's going to be tomorrow? And, you know, one minute is we're going to try to work things out. The next minute we're going to blow your smithereens. You know, it's just, I just find that it's probably been the most, in my adult life, I think, it's been, you know, the most hateful year in politics that I think that we've ever seen. And I don't think I'm alone thinking that, and I think there's a lot of people in Congress that are thinking the same thing I am. But a lot of them aren't talking about it. There's a few, but not a whole lot, not out loud anyway. And like I said last week, I almost feel like there's like this cloud hanging over the country. And I think it's him. I honestly believe it's Trump, that he is a cloud. I mean, there's a lot of Republicans I don't like, but I'll tell you, he really is right up at the top to dislike as much as I do. And I don't think he really... I honestly doesn't listen to what anybody that knows anything is actually saying. And he's still living in The Apprentice. He's still a reality show guy. And I just feel like nothing matters to him. It's what he wants, and that's that. So I don't feel real good about it. I don't think he accomplished anything. Nothing. I can't think of one thing he accomplished. I don't think anybody's better off now than they were a year ago. And I can only think the people are worse off and more fearful. You know, I just watched a little bit of the Richard Engel thing, which every time I see that guy, I'm always thinking, oh, my God, I hope I get to see him again. He takes such risks. But, you know, just thinking about all the stuff that's going on and how things can be done so differently, and they're not going to be with this madman, because I think he's as crazy as Kim Jong-un. I really don't. I mean, he's a kid in a schoolyard. There's a, you know, one bully, and now there's another bully, and they're going to want to, you know, have a fist fight. And if that's all he wanted to do with Kim Jong-un, I'd say, go at it. No, I've had it. Have a good time. But it's our lives, you know, all of ours, and the world even, really. But the world's not going to sit back and just say, okay, let them duke it out. It's not going to happen that way. It's not a boxing match. So, you know, I just feel like a very, you know, I certainly don't feel as good as I did a few years ago, in spite of it, of the things that were going on with ISIS and everything else, because I think the feeling was I felt secure in my presence. I miss him terribly. When Obama would get on the television, it was either to be feeling terrible about some tragedy that happened, or he had something important to say. So he wasn't getting on. I never recall him ever getting on television on every day and telling you something horrible or saying something horrible to somebody else. And it's like, you know, take a break, you know. It's like, and I don't mean a golfing break. I mean, take a break from threatening and, you know, it's just, I think it casts a terrible power on the whole country. And again, I think to the people that Macron did not invite him, he's upset about this too, it's ironic, that Macron didn't invite him to the annual climate change thing they have because he said that we're pulling out. And he's all upset now. He's supposed to be his good friend. They're good. They're the best of all friends. I mean, he's the best friend. And yet he wasn't invited to the party. Well, he wasn't invited to the party because he's not part of the party. So, you know, it's just like one thing after the other. And I think it just casts a feeling of almost like doom and gloom on the country, aside from everything else that's going on in the country. But he at the top is not somebody you can look at for reinsurance, you know. So I'm not feeling real happy about this past year.
Lou, your evaluation of Trump's first year.
I didn't catch that, James. I'm sorry.
Your evaluation of Trump's first year.
Oh, my God. Total destruction of everything that the United States stood up for around the world. Freedom of the press. He wanted to censure the press. He wanted to take their license away from them. Everything is fake news. Today you don't know what's real and what's not real. I mean, this Trump would look at you and lie in your face, and you really he's so convincing that you might even start believing the guy. But you got a guy that you really can't believe. His word is as good as maybe. For 10, 15, 20 minutes, you might rely upon it. And then he'll change his mind, and it'll be just the opposite. Our allies certainly can't trust us anymore. And we saw that situation where he had the Russians in the Oval Office giving him secret stuff that would jeopardize Israel to a point that I'm sure Israel doesn't have the confidence in us, in our secrecy or anything like that. our allies don't know, like Germany, they're taking over. It's part of being a leader of the freedom around the world. I mean, I never would think that the United States could be as vulnerable as it appears to have been this past year. And for whatever weak spots we had, there was Trump there trying to undermine even further what damage he's already done. The fact that he's got the world sitting on the edge of their seats thinking, what are they going to do next? I mean, he's trigger happy. The first month he's in office, I think he bombed two countries, Syria and I think there was another country that he bombed. He was also to take on Venezuela because he didn't like the way they're going. And right now, this Asian trip, I mean, this here is for what end? I mean, he's in the middle of trying to get the tax bill passed, get some legislation passed. And where is he now? He's in a two-week trip in Asia. What is he trying to do? He's trying to promote and generate a war with North Korea. I mean, since he got over there, he's given these remarks. Now is the world is getting, again, a little bit apprehensive because he's now daring once again in North Korea that if you do this, you do that, that's going to be the end of you and all that business. Why is he there except for the fact that I think he wants to hold on to his seat as president, and there's only one way that I know of that may assure him that he continues to stay, if there's a war. Usually when there's a war, the country stands behind the president because they look to him for security. What kind of security can you look to with Trump, who in fact generates it? He wants to be the one that pulls the trigger first. What I see is that he's developed tension and conflict between races, between ethnic groups and everything else. He has turned this country upside down. You don't feel safe anymore, as we did before he came in. He attacks everybody, undermines the fact that we'd like to feel we have a good military. Only he knows more than the generals. He'd like to feel that when you're in the service, ready to put up your life with transgender people. He wants to edit all of them out, 15,000 transgender people. You don't know what he's going to do next. The whole country is now uncertain as to where they are. Just like the whole world is uncertain as to where Trump is going to lead them next. My assessment of Trump is a total disaster. I only hope that something happens with Mueller or maybe the 25th Amendment to get this guy out before we get involved with a war. And so many people around the world could be at risk. South Korea, with all our troops over there and everything else, nobody is safe anymore with this maniac. So my assessment is, let's do what we can to get this guy out before it's too late.
How do you feel, James?
The fact that he's our leader, so-called, and the fact that not one bill has been passed by Congress since he took office, the uncertainty about about Obamacare. I mean, these are desperate situations that they impact millions of Americans, and he almost makes a joke of the government and how it's to be run. Look at the cabinet that he's got. There isn't maybe one or two qualified people on the cabinet. Other than that, you see defiant selection by Trump, and not giving any voice or getting behind somebody that's qualified. You look at Puerto Rico. Who's he got now to administer the aid? He's got that woman that made a total disaster out of Katrina. She was one of that was Katrina. And if you remember, there were 500 trailers that were brought in to those poor people in Katrina that had no more homes because of the flooding, the dike bursting. They were never used, those 500 trailers. Now he picks her to take care of the situation in Puerto Rico. It's like he's going out of his way to undermine the departments and the agencies that could run this country a little bit more safer and efficiently. So as far as leadership, a big zero. If I remember when he was campaigning, he said that he's going to surround himself and his cabinet with the best of the best, those qualified people. And it's just the opposite. He probably picked it, the people that are just the opposite of the qualifications necessary to run the department. So leadership, you have to give him a big zero. No bills passed, no nothing. You got the Republicans sitting on their hands. They're afraid to do anything. You got people like he brings into office in sensitive spots like this Flynn, and we just heard about the fact that he was getting $15 million to act as a transition between Turkey and Russia and the United States. I mean, and if you remember, when we were getting rid of Flynn, when he was getting fired, Trump comes around. I've never seen anybody go to bat for anybody more than Trump went to bat for Flynn. And you can't tell me or convince me that there was some ulterior dealings between Trump and Flynn for him to put up that fight and not check or verify his background. Presumably, he knew about it, and that's why he picked him. I say that he really did a job in messing up the United States, and hopefully we'll have another chance.
Okay. What's your assessment, James?
Yeah, James. What do you think about Trump's first year in office? Hello?
Hello?
James, what's your thoughts on Trump's first year in office?
Well, actually, I have a lot of mixed reviews about Trump's first year in office. I think he is definitely showing his true colors. And by that, I think he's definitely shown that he doesn't really care as much about what's going on with the American people. He seems to want to advance this type of elitist behavior, and we've lost all sight of all of the progress that we've made under Obamacare, President Obama, the last 8 years, and I think it's just a very vindictive little man that is finally raising he's raising the bar as far as the little man is concerned, because we have to try to get things back down to the grassroots. All of these different mandates we see coming out of the Trump White House, as far as tax reform, as far as eroding our political system, and I'm not sure how we're going to recover. We saw a lot of blowback, considering not only. Paris, the Paris Accord. We also see this man has no concept whatsoever of bringing the parties together. He seems to be another one of those very divisive. At dividing presidents, the like that we haven't seen in quite some time, and I'm not exactly sure how we're going to recover within these next couple of years, and really get America back on track. While he talks about making still going on with this, let's make America great again. Well, you know, it seems like this is the party that has done the most to upset what we consider great America. So I think this first year has been a total failure, and I just hope that the American public, and by this, once again, I'm not talking about the top 1% or the top 3%, but I'm talking about all of America, the way that we used to remember it when we were talking about it under Obama, and we were talking about the pride that the United States had brought back to the political world. I'm very frustrated here, because in the 70 years that I've been on Earth, and especially the last 50, it just seems like we have decided that it's better to tear down everything And the bad thing is that we're tearing it down, but we have no viable political structure for us to fall back upon. The Democrats, they're going to have to make some real strides. And while we're talking about the Democrats and real strides, let's start with you here, Lou. What did you think about this latest election? We saw that there were a lot of gains by the Democrats and by the LGBT community. We saw a lot of, I would say, backlash from Trump's first year in office. Lou, this past election in Virginia and New Jersey and Wisconsin, what did you take away from these last week's elections? Were they fool's gold, or is this America saying we want a real change?
I'm hopeful that this is the start of something good. Hopefully this is a good sign that the people in America are beginning to wake up as to what we really got and what a threat this man Trump is. The Virginia election, obviously, to all of the pundits, that was the real test. This man that they put up in office was a distant brother for a while. Until recently, seen the change. But even then, I'm sure that the Republicans and Trump figured they have a winner, only to see the election results that the Democrat won. I'm hopeful that this sets a trend, and I think it will set a trend, because like we weren't doing too good in these preliminary elections. We won a couple, but by and large, I'd say that this last Tuesday's election was a profound statement that we could take America back, that the Republican candidates you may look at, but you can't trust. I think that the way the Republicans have acted while Trump has been in office, they just condone and nod their head or look the other way. Not once did they censure Trump about anything that he came up with, like DACA.
I'm going to cut in there.
You don't get the people
speaking. I'm sorry.
Will you finish
anyway? I
think myself personally, I watched the election closely. I figured in New Jersey, people in New Jersey, they have to vote Democratic for that governor after 8 years of Christie. They're crazy, and I know they're not really crazy. So that was pretty good. But with Virginia, where I heard some of the pundits saying, well, you know what polls are and all that stuff. And yet that guy won handily. So it wasn't like he just, sneaked by, and that type of thing. Plus their legislature, the Virginia legislature, really took a hit, which is great. I think they were hoping they would flip about 9 or 10 seats in, and it looks like they flipped about 15. and they may even have control of the legislature there. So I think that was definitely a message saying, you know what, we've had a year of you, and we're not having it anymore. And, you know, naturally, you know, you hear like the other side saying, you know, well, Virginia's usually Democratic. I'm like, seriously? It usually really isn't. But the thing is that I think it's going to trend pretty much, because when we were talking, you know, just 2 or 3 months ago, I had the rose-colored glasses on, that I felt that 2018 may be a big year. Now, if we're able to, you know, get the houses in Congress back, I mean, that's going to be great. At least they'll be able to, they're going to do to him what they did to Obama, because he's not going to be able to get anything passed. Which, you know, that was really sad, but it was true. And the guy has to be stopped. I think his tax plan, I know I don't know all of it for sure, I mean, who does, but I know there's a whole different tax plan in the House than there is in the Senate, and never the twain shall meet. I really think they're going to wind up that with another, like, loser on that thing. And, you know, like, I'm really concerned about, like, people don't have to pay estate taxes if you're worth more than $5 million. Well, like, you know, I'm really going to worry about that. Or, like, they really need the money. You know, as Warren Buffett would say, like, he has no problem in paying more taxes. You know, and a lot of these guys don't. I mean, maybe a lot of them do. I don't know. I don't know how many there really are. But I think the election, I think it kind of set them back on their heels. And I think that Trump was happy he wasn't in the country. He took a shot at Gillespie saying he didn't embrace him. And then, yeah, it's just like, whatever he does, it's always going to be the opposite, because he'll never say it was my fault or like I did the wrong thing or backlash against me. But I think Virginia was a big win, and the various places around the country that were small stuff, but it was big stuff. And I mean, as far as the country itself, and I did see some results from different parts of the country where people who were much older, they said they never thought they would ever get involved, but they just had to. I mean, even on a low level, you know, political level in politics. And they said they just had to. They just couldn't sit there anymore, and they had to give it a shot. And, you know, they won. And I think that as time goes by, I think a lot of, I mean, these promises that he made were crazy to start with. But besides that, people that were counting on, I mean, there are going to be people that are going to vote for him no matter what. But the people that were counting on certain things, you know, like the jobs and I don't want to hear about the 4.1 unemployment rate, because then I'll use what he used to say about Obama. What about all the people that quit looking for work? You know, so it's really not 4.1, but it's really like 41. And the other thing that they always go in on is like the stock market. But you know what? I listened to Ali Velshi, and I read a lot about Robert Reich, and they both say the same thing. The stock market, first of all, half the country never even goes near the stock market. They don't have the money to play with. They don't understand it. And it's, you know, they're living from week to week. And they don't have time to be investing in stocks. I mean, it's just something that it's not, it's less normal than more normal. So you can't use the stock market as a sign of the economy being good or bad. And aside from the fact that it continuously did go up the whole time Obama, the whole 8 years, it never took a shot. It never went down. It just kept going up, and it went way up under him. But the thing is that I think that this is a sign of things to come. I think that Bannon, Well, so I'd love somebody to find his body somewhere. But, you know, he makes me just insane. But I really think that his weird Bannonism, I think they're starting to lose their luster already. I mean, I never heard of him before Trump, to be honest with you, because I didn't read things like Breitbart and that kind of stuff. I mean, it's not the kind of thing I would read. And, I mean, I stick to more normal, regular type of time and all that type of stuff. But I think, you know, Bannon and his horrible, it's always a horrible, nasty, terrible things he says. And it gets to a point where you just, you know, you don't want to hear this anymore. And I think even supporters don't want to hear it. And since he's kind of divided himself with Trump himself, they're kind of together, but they're kind of divided. It's not working. It's not working because you can't fool, you know, you can fool some of the people some of the time, but not all the people all the time. And I think it's not going to be much longer before, you know, people are going to say, okay, this, we really fell for this. This is ridiculous. And I did see the other day they were talking about, which surprised me when I first heard it, is that people in, you know, the middle of the country didn't care about this whole Russian thing, and it was very low, and they thought it was a bunch of nothing. But now it's starting to rise. Now, I don't know if it's starting to rise because of the indictments and all the different procedures that are going on and hearings and everything else. All these people are finally saying, you know something, I'm not any better off now. In fact, I'm almost worse off, or maybe I am worse off. And now what if he is in bed with these Russians, and what is he doing to us as a country? Because in reality, I don't believe that he cares about the country, like the United States of America country. I really don't. I think he cares about Trump USA, not the United States of America or the people in it. And I think people are starting to wake up already, which, you know, another year, they're going to be really pulling their hair out if they're having rough. You know, it's just, I really believe that. And I think as we see these things happen, and, you know, when that's, I can't remember his name, but something like Nordstrom and something like that, Nordstrom, in Virginia, I mean, that was a nice win. That wasn't just a, oh boy, you know, it was like 0.1% kind of thing. It was a nice one. So it's something that really, I believe, really sends a message. And a lot of things that individually that were broken down, like even these Confederate statues. You know, people in Virginia, they're like, hey, take them down. You know, like it's not this whole. But anything, I think that Charlottesville just made things. It made people more aware. I mean, unless you're a hateful person to start with and you're staying in that column, there are people that came that weren't and you have anything to do with that and then looked at it and thought, wow, okay, this is crazy. How could the president say there's fine people on both sides? Seriously? So I think little by little, even the most uneducated, undereducated, as he would put it, I'm going to realize that this affects me too. And that's the thing. Like eventually when it affects you or like you're sitting there waiting, you know, because you think that something great's gonna happen and it's not happening. People don't have a whole, you know, I mean, it gets to the point where how long is it that he's on a learning curve? You know, I mean how long did they give Obama as a learning curve? Nothing. Nothing. I mean, that was disgusting. So, I think anything anybody's learned on this curve is that he likes to play golf every Sunday and loves to be loved and loves for people to tell him, you know, how wonderful and great and terrific he is. And you're starting to see people flip, and I think they're going to continue to flip. And, boy, I don't know what's at the end of this road, But I know this is off the topic of the, but I think you brought up, or you did, about Flynn. And when he was, it was Flynn was hanging around him. He wasn't even a nominee yet. And I wrote to that brigadier general friend of mine, and I said to him, what's the deal with this guy Flynn? Like, do you know him and all this stuff? And he's like, oh, I've known him for decades. He said, he is a loose cannon. He's as crazy as they come. And he said, even he had once encouraged General Sam McChrystal, and he was telling him that what they should do is use the same tactics they used in Vietnam, which I'm not sure what tactics that was, but they used the same tactics they used in Vietnam and just go storm into everything. And I mean, it was, and they just, and McChrystal just wrote him off as a lunatic. You know, so that's why I couldn't figure out, like, well, who is this guy? And it turned out, you know, he was not a very good guy. And then Obama, also being the gentleman that he is and was as president, he was just going to all out and out fire him, but he did say him, you know, because he's a nice guy. He said, if you, you know, you want to keep your rank and your pension and everything else, just resign. And so he resigned. But, you know, the thing was is that he, you know, Obama just sounds very, very nice. But the reality was he had done a few things that were pretty quirky and not so legal. And so even other generals and this guy that I you know, was a big guy. So he was like, he's hanging on to him. He's hanging on hoping to get something with him. And he did temporarily. And then it's a good thing that what's her name? Kate, the assistant attorney general at the time, warned him about Flynn, and he stuck up for him anyway and fired her. And, you know, it looks like it's all going to come down. But, I mean, this guy, Flynn, I can tell you, but I'm sure Lou can definitely tell you, that you can look at him and see this guy does not want to see the inside of a jail or prison. He'll just steal everything. I mean, he's got, you know, I don't think he's not going to, whatever. I don't know if you want to call it loyal, but it's not very loyal. It's going to say, okay, let's make a deal. You know, that's what I think, and I don't know if you feel the same way. But just looking at him, he looks like the type that would be, let's make a deal. He's not the type that wants to go to jail. And on top of that, I read something about, because they're investigating his son, too, with that story thing that he was doing. And now Flynn's wife is getting all crazy because she doesn't want to see her son wind up in jail. So, you know, there's got to be, we don't want to be in the Flynn household, let me say it that way. What do you think, Lou? Do you think that Flynn was
more
of a flipper?
Lou, before I want to. There was something that was said by Mitt Romney that I don't know whether to find it disturbing or whether to find it right on point, but I want to get your perspective as a. A lawyer here. Mitt Romney has said that innocent until proven guilty is a criminal is for criminal convictions, not for elections. Lou, is there such a distinction in the law as making this distinction innocent until proven guilty? Also apply to how does this play out? I mean, is this you know, an actual part of the law? Like, you know, ignorance of the law is no excuse. I mean, is Romney correct here, or is this just more rhetoric against Trump?
Well,
as I interpret what he said, I think he was correct. A criminal law, you are innocent until proven guilty. You start off the case with a presumption that you are actually innocent, and the state or the federal systems require the prosecutor to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that you are guilty. And they had the burden of proof. The accused in that instance doesn't have to say anything, doesn't have to prove anything, doesn't have to introduce any evidence. It's all up to the prosecutor to actually prove your guilt. You don't have to prove your innocence. Now, when you look at the election process, you don't have any standards of proof beyond a reasonable doubt or the way of the evidence. The penalty, if you're not successful in the election process, is you're not elected. There isn't any punishment that goes with it. Punishment is enough if you didn't win the election. But insofar as election is concerned, there is no guilt or innocence. You either win the election or you lose. And there's no punishment attached. There's nothing to prove except that you are maybe the superior candidate. You naturally want to put your best foot forward. And also, I would imagine from what I see in these recent elections, you want to show that your opponent is not a good guy, doesn't have the moral background. I'm sure that if the American people saw what a immoral guy Trump is, he doesn't have the normal values of any reasonable person who calls himself an American, I don't think he would have been elected. So as far as the election process is concerned, entirely different from the criminal procedure. And that, I think, is what Romney was trying to signify. And I think he was right that in criminal, it is you are innocent until you're proven guilty. I think he was referring to this judge that won the initial primary, and the fact that he apparently was involved with a 14-year-old girl 40 years ago, that did cost him the election, but there would never be any finding of guilt unless maybe the statute is far different than other statutes around the country. I think 40 years would be beyond the statute of limitation. I don't think he could be prosecuted for that at this time, 40 years after the offense allegedly took place.
Even though she was a minor. But the thing is that Romney ended that with that this guy Moore should step aside, because this is just unbelievable. You know, it's just beyond comprehension that a 32-year-old man is you know, doing this to a 14-year-old, who, especially at that time, I do believe that a girl 14 wouldn't really have very much experience in something like that, especially with a much older man. When you're 14 and someone's 32, that's a very, very much older man. It gets a little different when you get older. But the thing about it, too, is the reason that, aside from a couple of other women coming out and saying that he's pretty disgusting, but they weren't minors. But this woman is now 53. I believe for no other reason than this poor woman is now getting death threats, and I mean, she's just, I mean, she really stuck her neck out, you know, to do this. And I don't think it was, you know, just something to, you know, to like he said, so here we go again with the witch hunt. You know, the witch hunt and so close to the election and everything, which, you know, one might say that about Comey and coming out with that email thing with Hillary. But the thing is that I think that's the first statement that Romney ever made that I really actually agree with him, because he was man enough to say this guy needs to step aside, as did John McCain. I think there might have been one of the two other Republicans. But it's, you know, aside from that, here's a guy that was removed from the Supreme Court of Alabama twice by the federal court for not obeying the law. And it's like, what kind of insanity is this? And I saw somebody say, I would rather vote for a child molester than a Democrat. And I was like, okay, this is insane. This is truly, truly insane. And it's like, what are they seeing? They're drinking. What's going on in that state? I mean, it's just, it's frightening. I mean, that state, I'd be afraid to walk in Alabama. I mean, I think that whole state is crazy. But it's, to think that that woman would come out now, and I don't know what made her do it, except maybe she just felt she just needed to. It was just, he's that nuts. And here's a guy, he's on a stage throwing a gun, and he's talking about, I mean, everybody, he wouldn't let a Muslim be in Congress. I mean, the guy is just, like, completely wacko. And then when that whole really insane scenario came out about Jesus, I was like, oh, my Jesus. Well, Jesus, you know, I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, are you comparing yourself to Joseph and Mary and Jesus? I mean, hello? I think that's a bridge too far. You know, that's the first time I've heard anybody ever do that. You know, so I feel like let's nail him to the cross and see if he comes back. But it's the whole thing is just disgusting, and he's disgusting. And I don't understand how, you know, I mean, this is what I think about how Trump and Bannon, too, have dumbed down, if it's possible to dumb down anymore some of these areas, but to have dumbed down some of these states to a point that somebody would say that. I mean, if our daughter was 14 years old and some 32-year-old guy was molesting her, you'd never see that 32-year-old guy again. You know, I mean, it would be, I don't know what her circumstances were. I know she had a mother. I don't know where her father was or what that story was. But the point is that he can remember. He actually didn't do that. He knows that much. But then about the other women that he was going out with that were like 17 and 19, he may have, but maybe he didn't. He doesn't remember. You know, it reminded me of the Alberto Gonzalez, I don't recall, line. And it's just, the guy just makes my skin crawl. You know, I just think he's, I mean, his whole thing about the whole LGBT community is, you know, like, I mean, first of all, being so judgmental for a judge that's been taken off the bench twice. It's just crazy. It's just crazy to me. And how he even got elected, it's like, I don't get it. You know, I wish somebody would do some sort of a mental workup on the people that voted for him to start with, because it's in this time, in this day and age, I just can't believe people are, I know that some of these evangelicals are really wacko, but it's off the wall, and I'm also at a point where, and I don't know how you feel, but I'm at a point where I'm ready to say, you know what, I don't care what your religion is. You know, it doesn't matter. I mean, read the Constitution. The whole thing's supposed to be separation of church and state. That was one of the tenets that were part of the Constitution, that freedom of religion. So, like, who's somebody else to say you shouldn't be a Muslim, you shouldn't be a Jew, you shouldn't be whatever? You know, even last week, before Trump left on his trip, he was touting a pastor that was saying that Catholics are pagans. And it's like, okay, I have to figure that out. Where'd that come from? And it's just like we're living in the, I feel like we're living in the twilight zone. I just hope that we wake up from it.
That's a great analogy there, the twilight zone. Lou, your thoughts on Mr. Moore and your opinion on this gentleman, period. I mean, when you talk about, you know, the things that he's done, the Ten Commandments, the way that he's handled himself, brandishing the firearm in public, I mean, what is your thoughts on Mr. Moore? Is this a blowback to the George Wallace days? I mean, Lou, what's your take on this gentleman?
Well, he supposedly is a judge. Supposedly he was on the Alabama Supreme Court. And they impeached him twice. Now, you got a judge up there on the Supreme Court. I think that the first thing he would be doing is following and complying with the law. Instead of that, he failed to comply with the law. I think there was one instance where the federal court had ruled that, I think it was related to some item of racist character, like the monument. They wanted to put up the Ten Commandments in the front courtyard, and the Supreme Court said you can't do that. You can't put up the Ten Commandments. Because the religious part is out of the governing role. They want to keep that separate from laws and whatever, the religious aspect. He insisted on putting the Ten Commandments stone out there, and they impeached him. Now, just from that particular two examples, where he failed to comply with the Supreme Court's, that's the federal Supreme Court, with their orders, he doesn't make a very good example for the people that may be litigating cases in front of him. I mean, it shows that he is ignoring what the law is. And if you're going to be a judge, especially a Supreme Court judge of Alabama, you want somebody that's going to follow the law, that's going to follow precedent. You want somebody that, because he has his own ideas of what the law should be or what he'd like to see it, that's not good enough to sit and judge litigants who have cases in front of them. So I would say that he's not really qualified to have been a judge, so they ruled when they impeached him, and now that he's looking for another seat, as we both know, I think Trump was pushing for Luther, another candidate in the primary, and he took a little beating because I think Bannon wanted Moore, and apparently Moore won the primary, and that was a blow to Trump. So when he jumps in on this thing, and I've never seen it in my life, and I've been around quite a while, where the judge, not the judge, the president, steps in the middle of a litigation, like he jumps in that situation with the sheriff of Ohio. He wanted to say he's a great guy, he shouldn't be sentenced and everything else. You don't have judges that are allowed to do that, to come up with their own independent thoughts. So you have a president that steps in the middle of litigation like he did and saying he wanted Luther to win. That's not the province of the president, and it's not the province of a judge to make his own laws. So I would say that it wasn't a bad thing to get rid of this guy, because he's a loose cannon, and he obviously cannot, will not follow the law.
Yeah, this whole comparison, Mary Joseph thing, and I mean, I think that this man is. I think he's went beyond evangelical and all that. I don't. Like I said,
here's a man that's talking, citing the Bible and judging everybody else, and yet, I mean, judging them on a personal level, and then comes in with this, it's kind of like a Mary and Joseph thing. Really? Is a Mary and Joseph thing? You know, I don't think so. I mean, I think you got to go back and read that Bible again, because then are you suggesting, I even put that on my Facebook page, that are you suggesting then that you're Joseph and that woman was Mary? I mean, like this is beyond. So this is beyond. It's really crazy. I mean, it's crazy. You know, and the thing that I'm noticing more and more, the more they get away with it, the more they do it. And when people don't rise up and say, you know, okay, that's really off the rails, it's scary. Now, it is Alabama. That's the only thing I can think about. It's not one of the most normal states in the country, but it's still. I mean, I just don't know. I mean, I was in Birmingham once. It didn't seem that bad, but you know, it was like a driving through thing. So I just don't get it. I don't get the voters. I don't understand what they're thinking. You know, I can't follow what you're thinking.
The last thing go ahead, Lou.
No, I just wanted to say that was a very bad analogy to use Mary and Joseph and Christ and more in the same sentence. I think that's an insult to the entirely Christian religion. But I just wanted to say that I don't know what the point was in using that as an analogy. He didn't seem to indicate what the point was. But whatever it was, it didn't fly. And I think a lot of people took offense at him trying to compare his situation maybe with Mary and Joseph. Ridiculous.
Yes. Yeah, I think that really kind of took it over the top. But for these last 5 minutes, let's talk a little bit about the tax reform. It seems the House has passed the ball over to the Senate. And once again, the Senate is trying to make its own agenda here. And by that, I mean that these, while one wants to break it down to four tax brackets, the other one wants to keep it at seven. There are some other deductions, such as student loan, Medicare, things like that, that have to be written in. Lou, what is your take on this new tax reform bill put forth by the Senate? And do you think that we're going to get anything done before the first of the year?
I don't think so. I think the House bill has sufficient differences from a Senate bill. It equates to the fact that they're not going to be able to compromise whatever. I think what's probably going to happen is that they're not going to agree on a single bill. I think the Senate's version of the bill is something that frankly they're really misrepresenting what the bill is all about. Just like Trump is saying that bill is going to affect him financially in a very large degree and extent. The opposite is true. Naturally, they want to get this bill passed so that the rich can get their tax deductions, and that these people that donated money to the Republicans and to Trump will say, okay, we got our taxes, but if we don't pass the bill, if they don't pass the bill, that's the end of that donor, because you can compare that with the Obamacare and all the other promises that he made. And I think that the Republican donors are just going to walk away, because this is obviously not the people that they want to represent them. And the same thing really with the House Republicans. They're not going to give up their guiding lights, the favors that they want for their constituents or some of that. I just feel that there's too many factions involved in this. And when the bills are released to the public to review and study and see what it's all about, they're going to see that it's not for the middle class that don't do any favors. It's a poor class. It's singularly for the wealthy 1%, as it usually is when the Republicans are in office. So I don't think that it's going to pass either of these bills. I think it's going to take the Democrats to come along and to compromise with the Republicans as the Constitution suggested this is the way it has to be. And so I don't think they're going to pass the tax bill without the Democrats' input.
Janet, your final thoughts on this new tax proposal?
Well, I really don't know the difference between the House and the Senate. I know they're different. I just don't know how different. But my guess is they're not getting it done. You've got a handful of Republicans that actually are the old guard that kind of really are still standing strong, and like McCain and them. And when the misrepresentations are like crazy, because when they say, people are going to have X amounts of money in their pocket, and So, yeah, it's true, over 4 years, which really will amount to nothing. It's really not going to help. And then there was one thing about, and I can remember when there were lots of things you could write off, interest on credit cards and all kinds of different things. And now it's down pretty much to, if you have a mortgage, the interest on the mortgage. And so I think they had put in there that, and I don't really know how this would work, but if you had a mortgage in excess of $500,000, then you wouldn't be able to deduct your mortgage interest. Well, that made a lot of states, including California, pretty crazy, and New York and New Jersey and California and parts of Florida, really Illinois, really was kind of, wow, that's a big deal, that's a hit. But I think it had to take that thing out. So my guess is that it's not going to get done. I really don't think so. I recently saw it, you probably did too, where John McCain had received, I think, the Liberty Medal or something like that, and he had Joe Biden with him, and Joe Biden gave it to him. And, they spoke to John McCain, and, McCain was saying, and I was never really like a big favorite of his, but I did think he was quite the war hero. He went to go through hell for sure. But now he's going through again. But he was saying, there was a time in this last 36 years or whatever, that a long time where they debated and they sat and they talked and they worked things out and things went back and things went forth and there were committees and things. You didn't just pop out one day with something and just think everybody's just going to sign it. Just because you're a Republican or you're a Democrat, and he was longing for those days. And was talking about the different bills that he and other Democrats were co-sponsoring. They should write these bills together so they could present them together and have get something done. And right now, I think we're really at an impasse in Congress to get things done, because I really think that the Republican Party is so fractured, they can't even agree with each other. So if they can't agree with each other, I don't see how they're going to agree with Democrats. I know, there's a little friction in the Democrats, too, but nothing like this. Nothing like what's going on over there. So I think that this is going to be another failed attempt, at least until after they come back. And then who knows what will happen by that time, if anybody's guess. I guess help will still be around for 2018, very things are going. But it's, and I guess, and eventually I think you're going to see Trump come out and say, boy, I never realized taxes were this hard. Because whenever something doesn't work out, it's like, I didn't realize, taxes were this hard, or health care was this hard, anything was this hard. So I don't know. I guess he thought it was just like a fun, thing to be, and you'd have lots of parades and people play music for you. And, it was all pomp and ceremony and finding out. Not exactly.
Yeah. Definitely.
But we say that every week, don't we?
Jen, do you want to give us your final thoughts for the evening?
Well, right now my thoughts are a little bit with keeping this man, Kissinger, off the button toward Korea. I have some real concerns with him about that, and he's not recognizing, what he's doing, and this is not, G.I. Joe game, and it's so. This past week, some of the things I heard him say, I winced, and I'm sure I may have said this, but my dad, after World War II, went to college and became a nuclear physicist and helped work on bombs and bomb testing, and up in Nevada and Kwajalein, and he said that we ever have a third world war, we ever really start using nuclear weapons, you know, for real, we're done. We're just done. There is no winners. And, which is always nice thing for a kid to hear, but I did see Tom Brokaw earlier tonight where he was saying it. He remembers going underneath the desk in school. I remember that too. And, you know, it's a kind of a scary, it's a scary thought. So I don't know where I feel better, whether this guy is at home or whether he's overseas. It seems like no matter where he goes, chaos follows. But my thoughts are that we make it next week. And nothing else.
Well,
really, nothing happened.
Well, let's hope that we can find a way to make compromises with the rest of the world. Now, all of a sudden, China's it's not China's fault about the trade and whatnot. So he's kind of all over the place. And hey, let's hope that next week we can come hope that there's some type of stability that we can all point to as some form of progress. Lou, your final thoughts for the evening.
Oh, okay. I'm looking at today, and I'm looking at Trump being over there in Asia and how he's pushing the envelope again on North Korea. And I'm fearful that he might be with that Un guy. He may push the envelope before he gets back from the trip. I think he's leaving Tuesday. There may be a problem that would be generated by Trump just to stir things up, and this way he could retain his seat as president, and he doesn't have to look around to see what country he's going to attack next. I think that it's an obsession with him that he is going to somewhere, somehow, start a war. And I hope it's not with North Korea. And I hope we can hold out until we get rid of the guy from office. So that's my hope. I'm afraid that by Tuesday, he might provoke a situation that would justify him with a preemptive strike. Anyway, that's my ominous thought for the day. Thank you, James.
Let's hope it doesn't get that far out of hand that quickly. So we look forward to talking to everyone next week. Also, next week, I want to talk a little bit more about Corker's proposal to eliminate the way the president is able to use our nuclear weapons as incentives. So I want to talk a little bit about that next week. And right now, we thank everyone for listening to the show. We appreciate your time, and we look forward to talking to everyone next week. Thank you so much, Janet and Lou. And we also look forward to having your presence again next week, along with Naj. So have a great night, everyone. And we look forward to talking to you again next week. Have a great night.
You too.
You too.
Bye-bye. Night.